It's called a hesped. It's called Dibri Haracha. It's called a tribute. I'm not sure I'm right to say hesped for such a person. Shabbos of my son Shabrach is a very special person. 2 minutes before the end of Shabbos, 2 minutes before Shkia of Shabbos afternoon, very special person left this world and went to an Olam Haba which our minds can't comprehend. Her name was Sarita Bas Avram Avigdor. Maiden name was Helberg. Married name was Katz. She grew up in Chicago. She was in the same class as Nathan C. Finkel. And that such a person should grow up in America and remain in America, that, you know, you had Americans or gifts to travel to Europe. You know, she stayed in America, and that she'd have Shatz Musagim and such play such a role, such a Muna Bitochen. It's a fellow. I relate to her as she was a person who was makar of me. She was a person who acted as a mother figure for a large part of my life. The way she was involved in my life and then my wife's life to get when we got married, our life. And she was a woman who was an inspiring woman. She was an inspiration for me. Was inspiration for me to this day. When you see an 85-year-old woman making new kabbalas, and after, because she wants to learn more and do more, when she's ill and she's in a rehab facility and she's telling me how she's listening to shiurim online and not stop shiurim, shiurim which you can only be right to come to listen to the shiur if you make certain kabbalas of a certain amount of tell them you're going to say every day, so this you're going to do every day, and all the, she's like undertaking new things and she's telling me all about it, how much she's learning from it. It's inspiration. Ritzel Balazhiner in his Hagdamah to the Nefesh HaChaim says that he'd heard from his father many times. So remember, we're talking about Ruchaim Balazhiner, the prime Talmud of the Vilna Gaon, and we would imagine that the message that he gave over to his son is Limud Torah, and he didn't say that. He said that the main purpose to the Bereshit put a person in this world is L'Hor L'Achrini, to help other people. He says, and I heard this from my father multiple times, and I think that's really what drove her was her desire L'Hor L'Achrini. Her husband's. She was married to Reb Chaim Tzvi Katz, who's Rabbi Einemer Zatzal's first cousin. Rabbi Einemer, those of you know a little bit closer to the family, you know that he had an older brother named Chaim Tzvi Einemer, who was Nifter many years ago. And they were named after the same Chaim Tzvi. Rabbi Einemer grew up in Akron, Ohio. Rabbi Chaim Tzvi Katz grew up in Canton, Ohio. Akron, Ohio was like the big city compared to Canton. But he was bezeichet to go to Tel Shiva and become a Talmud of Tel Shiva and then remain living on the Tel Shiva campus. He was a Rebbe in the Hebrew Academy, but he lived in the Shiva campus for many, many years. He told me a story that he was once by a chast in Eretz Yisrael. And I think that the story was quintessential Rebbe Chaim Tzvi. And I refer to it as Tante Sarita, that he met Rav Volpe. He introduced himself to Rav Volpe. Rav Volpe says, I want to tell you a story. So now we're in a story inside of a story. Rav Volpe was by a chasma, and somebody introduced Rav Volpe to this elderly yid. This elderly yid says, thank you for coming over and introducing yourself, and now there's another Jew in Christ that I could love. Now that I know you, I can be able to love you. So, now there's another Jew that I could love. So Rav Volpe said to Rav Chaim Tzvi Katz, thank you for introducing yourself. Now there's another Jew in the world that I can love. I know you and love you. And Rav Chaim Tzvi set up with a story, and it resonated with him tremendously, because I think that was perfectly him. Remember, when he was a Kayan, and he treasured his kahuna, And he would say the bracha of the kahanim, when they say the bracha before they give the brichas kahanim, they stress that there's the part of the mitzvah is to give the bracha ba'ahava. When he would say his ba'ahava, you would hear the ba'ahava, and that was him, and that was her. That was her. That I think that. That they grew together. That that she loved. She also had emunah. She had this tremendous emunah. And Silsharm says in Perek Aleph that the yisoid of all of avodah to Kadosh Baruch Hu is recognized that korek zehu atoiv. There's nothing else which is toiv. Many kiras elokim li toiv. Closest to Kadosh Baruch Hu, that's toiv. The chazul is there. Everything else, other than that, the people think is toiv. It's ain't a hevel b'shabnis. It's really, it's not. It's not significant. So she loved people, and she knew that the only thing that is toiv is being connected to Kadosh Baruch Hu. So she wanted people to be connected to Kadosh Baruch Hu. So she didn't do kiruv. She did love. She cared and she loved. So Mela, she wanted you to have more connection to Kadosh Baruch Hu. That was her love for you. She also sent you cake and sent you cookies and made sure that you had money and took care of you many different ways as well. But that was the driving factor. So she was doing kiruv in the 1960s when people didn't ever heard of the word yet. So how did I meet her? Which is quintessential to her. I was in 1972. I was in the Mount Sinai Hospital for my Crohn's disease, and coming from a totally secular background, Mount Sinai Hospital was the only hospital in the city which had a kosher kitchen. And as a curious young man, I was curious to know what kosher food tasted like, because I'd never seen kosher food, let alone tasted kosher food. So I arranged with the doctor that I should get kosher food from the kosher kitchen. Mrs. Katz had a son in the hospital at the same time, and I was not aware that he was there even, that he was further down the ward, named Mati Katz. Mati and I were in the hospital at the same time, and Mrs. Katz came to visit her son Mati one point at supper time. And so she noticed that there are two kosher kitchens trays being delivered from the kosher kitchen, one for her son, one for somebody else. Now, Mount Sinai Hospital is a Jewish hospital, but the vast majority of the patients in Mount Sinai Hospital were not Jewish. It was in the old neighborhood. It was East 105th Street. You hear Rabbeinu talking about East 105th Street. But the problem is, East 105th Street in 1972 was no longer a Jewish neighborhood. So it means there's another Jewish patient here, obviously, because they didn't have Muslims with halal yet. So she follows the train to do Bikur Cholim. And she met me, and she saw that I'm a curious young man, and I want to know more about kosher food, so maybe I want to know more about Judaism. And with that, she wasn't selling Yiddish, she was selling Judaism. Judaism was something I was interested in. And with that, I ended up going to the Talmud Torah, which she taught. It was twice a week after school and once a week on Sundays. It was on Sundays and twice a week after school. And she arranged everything. It was totally tuition-free. And she arranged a bus, and she arranged all of the arrangements. And there I was going to the school, and I started learning Alabes, because I never learned Alabes. Then the yeshiva had a Shabbaton in yeshiva. The school, known as Yabi, Yeshivas Adas B'nai Yisrael, had a Shabbaton for the boys in yeshiva. And the arrangement was that each boy would be set up with an older bracher to be a mashpia. And she, behind the scenes, so she arranged that I should be set up with. There was two bachurim in the yeshiva who were very involved in her care for chokim problems, programs. And so she arranged that they should be involved with me. And I had a very wonderful Shabbos, and then they invited me to come back again on their own, which they borrowed a car and drove all the way out to my house, which was quite far from yeshiva, and bring me out there again eventually. And they were going to I finished Alabes, by that point in time I finished learning Alabes. And I went to Camp Kultura, which she arranged. I wanted to go to the camp. And the camp was for 4 weeks, and the 4 weeks I said I want to stay for yeshiva. So we had to convince my mother and my father, and we had to convince the yeshiva, because I was coming straight from public school. my background at this point in time was I was Shomer Shabbos for the 4 weeks of camp. I had learned three Vlada Gemara in camp with a very special Rebbe, and actually was able to say them Baal Peh. Because when I took my fahir for the yeshiva, they didn't believe me, so they tested me on the Mishnah. Kedushin Chavtesim and Aleph, Mitzvah Zav Olabed, Mitzvah Ben Alav, and I got actually translated the Baltakim, Maltashas. I mixed up Baltakim, Maltashas. They still took me in. But they didn't want to take, she didn't want to take me in, which I did not know until so many years later. Regifter was against it, others were against it. She went, she told Regifter that he's wrong, and she's right, and I should come to yeshiva, and I'm going to be an asset to the yeshiva. And how she had the audacity and the Gevuras Hadas and the strength to believe that I would be able to be successful in yeshiva, and the way she came up with the cheshbon, why it should be okay that I should come to yeshiva, was mind-boggling. But she convinced Regifter that I should come to yeshiva, and then there was an whole meeting about it, and at the whole, there was a special whole meeting convened to discuss why I should come to yeshiva. I found out this about 20 years later, and some members on Hola were very upset at her that she pushed this through. She rammed it through to the point that one of them, her next-door neighbor, did not speak to her for 3 months. And they were closest friends. The Barsham has a sense of humor. I was honored by Tel Shishiva 3 years ago, whatever it was. So the honorees were the family of that person and myself. Those are the two honorees. So I'm sitting next to, you know, so afterwards I was talking to the daughters that he passed away, that Rebbe, I eventually came very close with him. She says, you know, Daddy didn't speak to Tata Sarita for 3 months because of him, you know. I said, yeah. So the older daughter knew the story. She had that Gevuras Hadas to believe that if she believed in somebody, but she started with doing chesed. So apparently, I checked this story with Yechiel Spiro in his Yetad Naman article about her. The Spiro family is very close with the Katz family. He writes that her Rebbe Meir said about her when she was in her 20s, when she got married, that the world stands on the schus of Sarita Katz. Now I checked. I called them up to make sure that, you know, he gave me the shtashas of the sefer. He brings another story over there that when she was a teenager, she was living in Chicago. Ben Gurion came to Chicago, and he spoke, and he didn't have a yarmulke, so she pulled out a yarmulke out of her purse because she always carried an extra yarmulke, and she threw the yarmulke up to the podium, so he should have a yarmulke to wear, and he put on the yarmulke. So I said, you know, she started her career very young, and she ended it. She passed away on Shabbos. The Shabbos of Shev Bruchus. I guess that's I'm keeping track of this Parshas for Shalach. Erev Shabbos of Parshas Bo, they arranged that she should go see a top specialist in Long Island from where she was, and of course they had to make a transport for her, so because she couldn't go by car. And she gets to this doctor, and the doctor is Jewish, but he's not frum. And the first thing she says to the doctor before she even discusses her illness is, do you put on tefillin? That's the first thing she wants to do, you put on tefillin. Because you need to put on tefillin. The doctor who arranged it, her doctor, started putting on tefillin because of her. And when he said he started putting on tefillin sometimes, she said, why only sometimes? All the time. You know, I went to visit her in the rehab in the summer, and she introduced me to her. The person in the next room over was a reform rabbi who was there in the rehab as well. And she tells me how she's being makariv him and his wife. The wife now only wears dresses, and then, you know, she doesn't use the cell phone on Shabbat. You know, she's busy being makariv. She hasn't stopped. It's 60 years later, and she's still being makariv lachrini. She's helping other people. Besides the fact that she was constantly, she was basically homebound, so she spent the whole day calling people. She, you know, besides her learning things, she was busy calling people and giving them a chizuk. I asked the Rebbetzin, how are you feeling? Baruch Hashem is one answer, which is not very informative. The other answer was the way the Rosh Hashanah wants me to feel. That's how I'm feeling. I mentioned this to the children when I went through Menachem Oval. This is, you know, we got the same answer out of her as well. The only way we knew how she was doing is if we would be there when the doctor came in, the doctor would ask her how she was doing. She would say the truth because she had to tell the doctor. So that's how we would know how our mother was doing. Otherwise, we would not know how she was doing because she doesn't kvetch. She's not focusing on herself. The conversation, any conversation I would have with her, I try to talk about her. Within 30 seconds, the conversation was about me, how I'm doing, how my wife is doing, how my son is doing, my daughter is doing, how's yeshiva doing. You know, it was always about somebody else. It's never about herself. So this was her definition for all of her life, was to focus on somebody else. Every Friday afternoon, there was a bacher who would come to the house and pick up her care packages for all the bacher that she was interested taking interest in and dropping off. Everybody got a care package of cake for Shabbos. She had this little dinky kitchen, and you know she was busy. And then every simcha which took place, she sent chocolate mousse. That was her thing, with chocolate mousse. One year in Purim, she made a cheshbon on the karla, had 70 yungalite in the karla. She made a cheshbon that she was involved in some way or other. 50 of the yungalite had done something, a karsa toiv. Like, you know, they learned with somebody that she had arranged, and she found the karsa toiv. So she had sent them shalom. She said, only 50? I can't send only 50. So she sent all 70, you know. But because she had a karsa toiv, you were helping her. When her husband passed away, so they made a program, Zichron Chaim Tzvi, for those who are not frum yet. That was the title she always used. They're not frum yet. There's no such thing as people who are not frum. People which are not frum yet. She's going to help them do better in their life. When the Russians came to Cleveland, right, so these people needed help. They needed help in Yiddishkeit, they needed help in finances, etc. She went knocking door to door. She went to the neighborhood where they moved into, Mayfield Heights, and she went knocking door to door. Do you want to learn more about Judaism? Is there anything that you need, something I can help you with? And she didn't stare, so, you know, this is a barrier, I'm from Velt, I believe in a Kurdish book, I believe that the only thing in the world which is time is this, and I love you, I care about you because you're in truth, and I want to help you, and I'm going to help you, whether you like it or not, I'm going to help you. And that's, she was, it was mind-boggling to see that she, and she did it, the reason why people listened to her was because she was, the doctor who's treating her, she says, Mrs. Katz is irresistible, you can't resist her. She's going to change your life, whether you like it or not. She's going because she cared. You knew that you couldn't resist her because the woman next door says, "I love Mrs. Katz." That was what she told me. I love Mrs. Katz. They had a relationship of a few months already. You know, that was a relationship. She developed a relationship with this woman to the point now she can convince her to start wearing only. You're a Rebbetzin, you know. You're a rabbi's wife. How could you wear pants? Of course you have to wear dresses. And she did it with that. I was talking to Healy Spear. He says, you know, he was always very close to the Rebbe and used to visit her. Every time he would walk in, she would give him a suggestion of something he should be doing the Kabbalah or work on and do. And then she would ask him, what about the thing I asked you before? Okay, he said, I'm doing this. Okay, now do this. There never was enough. You always do more. And she didn't stop. She just always was pushing the next step. And that story of the going to Long Island, so Hatzalah arranged for an ambulance, and two drivers came and took her, etc. So these two people went out of their way to help her. So she sent somebody, and they bought sorum for the two of them. She had them wrapped. She dictated notes. And Erev Shabbos, before she was nifter, she had somebody go. They lived in Muncie. These two individuals lived in Muncie. One Muncie went to New Square. They went to Muncie. They went to New Square. They dropped off the presence to show her karsa toiv, these people who one time decided to be nice enough to transport her to this doctor in Long Island. And that was her feeling of a karsa toiv, of that somebody did a favor for me, how could I forget it? I used to call her semi-regularly, not as much as I should have. And I always live with that guilt feeling. I didn't visit her enough. I didn't call her enough. And, you know, life gets busy, etc. So the daughter, said, you know, my mother is such a curse type that you kept the kesher and you always were talking to her. Like, always talking to her. Let's not exaggerate, please. I wasn't always talking to her. And then you would send copies of your shmuz, and she loved that. And I would give her the packets of the Karla made, and she would show it to all of her children. And, you know, and she had such a curse type because I didn't do enough. But to her end, whatever you did was a chesed. So how could I not have a curse type? I was talking with her, my wife and I went to visit her in the summer, and we stopped in by, you know, by, she's in rehab then. And we were talking about, you know, she suggested that maybe there's somebody in Cleveland I could go fundraise with the Carmel, and she remembered the family, and she remembered the details of the family, and she remembered, you know, because when she had been out of Cleveland for years already because of her illness, and she moved out of Cleveland, seven, 8 years ago. And but she remembered the family, she remembered the names, she remembered all the children, she remembered all the details, because how could you forget somebody that you care about so much? Why she care about them? Because they were one of the hundreds of families that she happened to have been involved in during her stay in Cleveland. She had a notebook. The children showed me her notebook. You know, there's a fascinating, because the more Menachos says that there was a Megefer. By itself, Rabbi Melech, in response to that, instituted 100 brachas b'chagim. So I once pointed out in the Shmuz that there's 100 brachas b'chol yom, but the nusach of the brachas is Dabar HaMelech. The nusach of brachas was not instituted until the Achshin HaSagdala, beginning of Bayis Sheni. So from the time of Dabar HaMelech, all the Bayis Rishon and the during the Tkufa of the Churban in the Golas Bavel, there was no nusach brachas yet. It was instituted at the beginning of Bayis Sheni. So how do you say 100 brachas b'chol yom? 100 times during the day, you would stop and think about how Kadosh Baruch Hu was mated to you, and you would say a bracha to Kadosh Baruch Hu for being mated to you. So 100 times that you had to force yourself to stop and think about how you want to thank Kadosh Baruch Hu. So she had a notebook. Roshan, I thank you. It was written in Yiddish because, you know, she grew up in Chicago and she spoke English flawlessly with a good Western accent, as far as I'm concerned. That's called flawless. But when she wrote in Yiddish. You know, that notebook for herself, she still wrote in Yiddish. And each line was a thank you to Kadosh Baruch Hu for something. And she could constantly add on new things into her notebook. And, you know, these new things that she would think of, you know, just thank you, Kadosh Baruch Hu, for dialysis, because Baruch Hashem, there's dialysis, so I can live. Wait, how can I live without dialysis? I went to visit one time in the dialysis center in Borough Park where she was going for dialysis, and she introduced me to the Russian Jewish non-frum aide, and how he's such a wonderful person, he's so nice to her, and he takes care of her, and she has such a great time, and she's convincing him to put on tefillin, and she's, you know, she was busy making the Russian aides frum while she was there in the dialysis. Most people want to go for dialysis, they're not busy making everybody else frum, they're busy surviving the process of dialysis. It's very, very physically wears you out. It's very draining, no pun intended. But when she went knocking on doors for the Russians, it wasn't, you know, she took care of their gashmias. And she said one time, she says, you know, you can't, these people have been, I once heard from a person who was dealing with Kiev and the Russians. And they said, their whole life they've been dealing with people who are indoctrinating them to ideas. So they take all of it with a grain of salt. He says, unless you take care of their gashmias, they're not interested in hearing what you have to say. This is what this person who was involved in Kiev and the Russians told me. And I noticed with Hansarita also, she took care of their gashmias, very much so. But the difference is that this person took care of the gashmias as a hechatim, because since he was involved in Kiev, he wanted to care of them, he took care of the gashmias, because he had to care of the gashmias. It was hechatim for the rukhtis. I heard, somebody needs help, how can you not help? Like, this person needs help, and they need to find a job, so let's help find them a job. They need to, and of course, you care about the roofies as well, but the message was, I love you, I care about you. She didn't kvetch, she didn't complain, because she was a happy person. Like, it wasn't just numbers of frumkeit, you know, she was a happy person. There's so much good in her life. She just focused on the good, she didn't focus on the bad. I once had, there was her palms. Rapam said about his mother that his mother never said Lashon Hara in her life, and she never learned Hillel's Lashon Hara. So how's that possible? The answer is she was such a positive person, and she's such a person who saw the good in people. And I was like, how could you ever see something negative about a person to talk about? It's not shy. You have to learn Hillel's Lashon Hara to know that. You know, so she, when she talked about somebody, it's because, you know, there's something which had to be, you know, somebody can help them. Otherwise, it's not too well. It's like, there are people like one of the people. The doctor's such a wonderful doctor. He's so nice, and he's so this, and the aide is so nice, and this one is already so nice, you know, everybody's so wonderful. She was a happy person. The house they had in Cleveland, which I spent Pesach with them, my first year I spent Pesach with them, it was this little dinky house, small kitchen, one bathroom, herself, her husband, and her eight children. And me and the other guests who were there, etc. Somebody else was there as well. One bathroom, you know, like for 12, 13 people for Pesach, all of Pesach, you know. that's the house. That's what the house was. But the house was, you know, the upbeat, the positive of Chaim Zizek LeBracha. It was, you know, just the storeroom where, you know, it was. She never wore makeup. She didn't wear makeup, you know. This Russia made them, you know, they look, they have to look presentable, and that's it, you know. One time in her life, she just, somebody's in the hospital, was like a little bit down, so she with another friend, they went, she put on makeup, and she made a whole skit to make the person happy. Because this is a way to be, make somebody else happy. They lived in Tel Shiva campus, but Dafka, they could have moved to, you know, closer to the school where her husband worked. But she wanted to be close to the Rosh Hashivas. She wanted to be close to the Rebbeim. She wanted to be close to the Gedolim. And the school where she taught, she was at Aspen Yisrael. So Yabi, so it was her. It was Gifter's Rebbetzin and Pesach Stein's Rebbetzin. Both of them, Baruch Hashem, Shmigzut and Stark, is still alive. And there was other people taught there. There was almost a side taught there. And there was other people who taught there. Like, you know, and they became almost like sisters. But how could she leave, you know, these cluster of people and go live somewhere, not, you know, I'm in the city and they're here, I should move away from them. So I'd rather stay in this small dinky house, dilapidated old house with the front porch, which sort of flat, right, than move into a more established home somewhere else. But I can be close to Gedolim, close to people that I learn from. And she would tell me how much she learned from them. And how much she, you know, these are special people. And she, I never heard, you know, wonder like maybe they were saying the same thing about her, that, you know, she's a special person. Of course they did, but, you know, that was never part of her thought process. So she was. I visited her a few years before. She was a few years ago, and, you know, she's telling me about this shiur that she found by these women in Williamsburg, and it's in Yiddish, you know, and it's so inspiring, and they make Kabbalahs together, and they have a chabura, and you have to commit to, and so she's so excited about it. She's doing it, and she's involved in it, and, you know, and I can't call her between 10 and 11 in the morning, because that's when she's listening, so I shouldn't feel bad if she doesn't answer that, it's because she's involved with it. Like, she's still growing. Like, she never stops. She's 85 years old. You know, she's sick. She had three major crises in the last two plus years. Each one ended up in the hospital, but it was a nace that she survived. And then she had to go for rehab to be able to the process of being able to strengthen herself, to be able to take care of herself again. So this last time, she went. Well, not the last time, but before that, she was in rehab, and I called her that my son was a chosun. She says, "Rebelli, I'm going to work hard at all of the different therapies that they're doing for me, and I'm coming to the chast. That's my goal. I'm going to come to the chast." Of course, she ended up in the hospital a few weeks ago, and that was the end of that. And that's what I thought. Then, of course, I called her the day of the chast, and she says, "Rebelli, you know, I had a transport arranged to come to the chast. She's going to come, like, you know, in a bed, you know, like, you know, wheelchair, whatever, you know, but not even, like, you know, whatever, you know." But the doctor said, it's not safe for me to come, I can't go. The doctor did not allow it. So I'm Skyping to the chasna. So I hear those Baruch Hashem, there's this boy walking around with his iPad, you know, Skyping. So Baruch Hashem worked out, and the people said Mazel Tov to her, and the next day I called her, and she told me it was Gevaldik. She got to see even more than had she been by the chasna. She wasn't focused on the fact that she missed the chasna. She was like, I saw something, it was so nice, it was wonderful, you know, like, you know, I'm so sick, I can't make it to the chasna, I wanted to go, and I'm so frustrated, I wasn't able to go. None of that. It was, wow, it was so beautiful, I got to see so much, and I was so happy, and I was so zimcha. I had such a good time, and it was great. It was like wow, you know. So I called her on Wednesday. So on Friday, she calls me on Friday. This is the day before she's nifter, thanking me for calling her on Wednesday just to see how she's doing. Like, that was like the last conversation I had with her, was that she's calling me to thank me for calling her. The day after your chasna, you called me to see how I'm doing, and how it worked out, and it's so nice of you, and so wonderful, and you're such a curse of time that you did that. It was like, you know, will you stop it already? You know, like, of course, I'm gonna, you know. But her, that was, she had a curse of time that I called. So she had that was my last conversation, was her, quintessential her. It's not about her, it's about somebody else. She wants to give to others, but nothing, she never takes for herself. And she lived like this, so I really said this about her in 1952, that the world stands at the schus of Sarita Katz, that stayed intact for 60 plus years. that the world stood on her schus. It was the most inspiring person, probably the most inspiring person that I ever met. That she just loved and she cared, and she had such a moon on the Kadosh Baruch Hu. And this is Toiv, and how could I not want you to share that? So the children both told me a story. After all the stories that they were saying by the Hespedim and the people were coming and telling them, they sent Shiva and Cleveland for a few hours and they went back to New York. So they're in the airport and they're going through the TSA line. And there's this older gentleman working for the TSA, bareheaded fellow. And one of the grandsons is in line. He says his name is Yaakov Yosef Katz. He says, are you related to Mrs. Sarah Katz, who just passed away? And I just read in the Cleveland Jewish News that she just passed away. He says, yes. You know, you don't just have a conversation with TSA guys. You know, like, you know. He says, you know, she taught me in third grade in Yabi. So his father, one of the Valim, was the next person in line. So he stopped, you know, he called his father over because he had been waiting behind the barrier for the next person. And they made another TSA line so people should know, because, you know, she wasn't over there. So he says, what would my mother say? So his fellow's name is Gary. He says, Gary, do you put on tefillin? He says, sometimes. He says, Gary, why only sometimes? You should put on tefillin every day. Good. Five people further back of the line is another son. He says, Elinota Katz. You know, it's Elinota Katz. He comes to the line. So this fellow says, I had, you know, but now he would, you know, realize it. Says, I had your mother's teacher. He says, do you put on tefillin? That's what he asks him. He says, that's what my mother would say, you know. He says, sometimes. He says, why only sometimes? Why not all the time? You know, so the legacy is, the message was put on, was being transferred. But, you know, the children are wonderful people. I'm very close to them. I feel like brothers to them, brothers and sisters. But that generation, her mother is a whole different Bria. She's just, this was, she loved people. She just loved people with a tremendous ava. And the more people she knew, the more people she loved. And there's everybody she could find something positive to say about and see something good in them and make them feel good about themselves. And she used to compliment, and she used to, you know, her belly is so gavaldic, what you're doing, like she didn't have to say that, you know, but she didn't say that just to me. She had this to hundreds of people. She was busy, and she was keeping cheshbon. She was constantly talking to people and giving them chizik and saying, you know, you're doing wonderful and you're doing gavaldic. At the same time, she expected and she pushed, and she's able to combine the two in a way which wasn't overbearing. You didn't get the, like, oh man, she's there I go again, asking me for more. It was more like, wow, yeah, she really cares about it and she wants me to have more, so I want to see if I can do more as well. So she was the Makarev. She was a person who did a tremendous amount of kira because she cared. She's a person who grew. She's a person who lived her life. It's Tachlis Inish of the Har Lachrini. From her story with Ben Gurion, to make sure that the Jew had a yarmulke sitting on the podium, till her story with the doctor a few days before she's nifter, to make sure he's wearing tefillin. From the story of the Karsa Toiv. Of many years back to the curse of Toiv of now, and the focus was not herself, it was others that she cared, and that's in my life, it's a tremendous void. There was a conspiracy in my family not to tell me about it during Shiva Brachos, but my family knew about it earlier than I did because they could understand how emotionally challenging it is. I loved her like a mother. What can I say? But it didn't work. Yizkor Baruch, and I think if we can just take by the Hespedim, one of the Rabbanim said, this is somebody asking, like, what can you do? He says, if you undertake one chesed, that you can do Le'ilui Nishmaso. One way, think about somebody else more. Put yourself out there for somebody else, and not be embarrassed and worried about what they can think about you, but just focus on the person. She wasn't this loud, you know, a rah-rah-rah person. It wasn't because, like, you know, she was quiet. She wasn't a loud person. But she was a person who cared, and therefore it was more important for her to put herself out there for the other person than worry about whether she's going to be uncomfortable or not. And if we can do that, and we can focus on somebody else, in some way help somebody else, and think about somebody else, and think about somebody else's feelings, and help them in some way, and help them grow in ruchnius, and take care of them in gashmius, that would be a tremendous ili for her neshama, and that the lesson, the legacy of her life, will continue.